Welcome to the Fish Nerds, the show about fish, fishing, and eating fish. Hi, I'm Clay Groves, Chief Executive Fish Nerd of the Fishing Podcast, Licensed Fishing Guide, and I am super happy to have everyone listening. We are creeping in on, I guess, almost 10 episodes away from our 200th episode Big Shebang. We're planning a big event on the water for that one, so stay tuned for details where we're going to invite listeners to come record that podcast on a pontoon boat on the worst lake in the whole state of New Hampshire, Silver Lake, so we can have a Suck It Silver Lake cruise ship going out, and we can make a podcast while we're there. So stay tuned for details on that coming up in May. Doc Martin's coming to come out and visit us for that show. We're going to probably get Captain Sean in. I haven't asked him yet, and other characters you know. If we're lucky, we can at least get Andrew Lewin in over Skype or FaceTime because he's stuck up in Canada where it will still be frozen. Andrew here today with us from the Speak Up for Blue podcast. Welcome, Andrew Lewin, host, founder, Speak Up for Blue, and self-proclaimed oceanpreneur. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you very much. I love that intro. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That trip sounds wonderful. I would love to join in by phone or however we could FaceTime or whatever we can do.
That'd be awesome. We own the technology. We just need to use it. Exactly. So it'll be fun. It'll be really fun. And you could tell us what we're doing wrong for the environment by running a pontoon boat out on a lake. So Andrew's like my conscience. Like every often, he'll check in with like an environmental thing and I'm like, oh, yeah, I better be nicer to the world.
I'll have a gavel or something and just be like, no, that's wrong. That's wrong.
Oh, you could be our environmental. We can hold environmental court. On the boat. I love that idea. So
I think the trick now, though, is for environmentalists is not to judge as much and just to kind of like let people know, you know, like I wouldn't do that if I were you, or not to like, you're awful. How dare you? That's the kind of switch we try to make now.
Well, you know, it has to come from incremental and small changes. This whole notion of we need to stop doing everything turns people off because they know they realize that everything they do is wrong. They're using plastics, they're drinking water from a water bottle, they're using straws, they're killing sharks. Whatever it happens to be, dial it down a little bit. You know, let them kill something, let them use some plastics, but then kind of slowly ease them into that conservation model.
Absolutely.
Really good. So, hey, welcome to the show. Before we begin, though, I have to do an advertising because that's how we make money on the podcast. Yeah. So episode is brought to you by Health IQ. Health IQ is the life insurance company for people who live a health-conscious lifestyle, like runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, environmentalists, and more. I add that for you, Andrew.
I like
that. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. If you want to find out if you can save, go to healthiq.com/FNPFishNerdsPodcast and see if you qualify. It's a quiz. I took the quiz last week, Andrew, and within 30 seconds of finishing the quiz, I was on the phone with a representative from the company asking me some more questions to see if I qualified. I'm not going to tell you the results because I am a little overweight right now. So it really is important that for this you get in. If you're a healthy person, you've got to make sure you do this. So they did give me an offer that was better than my current life insurance. So is there.
You know what I feel for, especially for the U.S., I feel like it's in your best interest as a human, as a person, and for your family to be in shape. Because as the older you get, you and I know, the older we get, the worse the health problems get, the harder it is to recover from injuries and this kind of stuff. And then you're all of a sudden, you're shelling out money for medical bills, and they get crazy high. My dad was in life, health insurance for people who go on vacation, and the amount of things that people like here in Canada to pay like overnight because of a heart attack, and you pay like $10,000 to $100,000 a day. You're just like, Jesus, like that's ridiculous, you know, in terms of that. So it's worthwhile making sure you're healthy to get that.
It is. It is. And yeah, so stay, if you're healthy, stay healthy and go to Health IQ. .com/FNP and save on your life insurance. Very important. You got a family, right?
I do.
I assume you have life insurance, right?
I have life insurance, yeah.
Yeah, you need it because when you die, your kids need a car. So
the trick is here for what I do is I keep it high enough that my kids and wife will be fine after I'm gone, but low enough to lower the incentive for my wife to off me.
Right. You don't want your life insurance to outvalue you.
Exactly.
$2.5 million. I like you, Andrew, but yeah. Do I love $2.5 million?
Exactly, exactly.
Perfect, perfect. All right, so that's our ad. And if you want to advertise with the Fish Nerds, just email clay@fishnerds.com. We'll get you in the queue. We do have a couple slots open after this week's episode, so check it out. All right, Andrew, so you make a podcast.
I do.
And you've been on the Fish Nerds podcast several times. You used to do a segment called Speak Up for the F in Blue, which we miss.
I know. I apologize.
We should do that. And we're happy to see you. So just kind of give us a little bit of an overview of your podcast. Give us the elevator pitch.
Yeah, essentially what I do is I try and make people aware of what's happening in ocean conservation worldwide. So I cover not only the U.S., Canada, Mexico, North America, Europe, but everything that's happening in the Pacific and the Southeast Pacific, in Australia, all over the Great Barrier Reef, all of the things. I follow the news. I update people on the news. And essentially the whole point is to bring awareness. I interview people too who are doing like amazing things for seafood and sustainability and all these different projects, restoration and working with communities and all that kind of stuff. Just to make people aware of what's happening in the ocean beyond what we see in the mainstream media, beyond just, oh, another shark attacks somebody and tries to kill everybody, so we're going to kill all the sharks. Well, no, we could dive deeper into those types of stories and tell what's really behind the science and the conservation. And the idea is to do this to help people live for a better ocean. So the whole goal is, you know what's going on out there. So now you know, now you have that on your conscience, like, okay, I can reduce my single-use plastic. I could make sure when I go to buy seafood, I'm buying sustainable seafood and stuff like that. And you've been on the podcast a couple of times, and it's been wonderful. We had a whole sustainable seafood interview, and it was great to learn about that project you were a part of. And it's just making people aware of what's happening, because I used to get frustrated all the time as a scientist talking to friends and family who had no idea what was happening with the ocean. And it was one of those things where I was like, well, of course they don't, because we're all competing with news and what the Kardashians are doing today and all this kind of stuff. And it's one of those things where it's like, you need to figure out what's going on in our
world. But you know, if you can get the Kardashians on your podcast,
I would never
do it.
No.
Do it, because they can bring attention. And the attention, you know, you might bring over, you know, a couple thousand new people, and a handful of them you might reach with your message. So
that's true.
Don't shy away from the Kardashians, and they are fun to look at.
So you know what? I hear you there. I think I would have, you know, I had a podcast where I said something about Miley Cyrus, because she did a big thing. She traveled with Carl Safina. Do you know? Have you heard of Carl Safina?
I've heard, but you have to remind me who that person is.
Carl Safina is a scientist, an ocean scientist, been doing this for decades, but he's also an avid fisherman. And so he professes sort of like sustainable fishing and just conservation in general, but he's probably what we would call an ocean celebrity. He's like the guy you look up to, like a mentor type thing. And I had him on the podcast, and he did a trip out on the west coast of BC to save the wolves. And there's a coastal population of wolves out there, and they were going to increase, the BC government was going to open up hunting for them. And
that's bananas.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't want to. And these wolves are special, especially the coastal ones, because they actually go in the ocean and they actually eat stuff out of the ocean. Yeah, it's really
seafood kind of wolves. I see a whole story there. I need to make a
note. Oh man, it's amazing. Yeah. I'll send you some stories. But and so he was part of this crew.
Do you think they taste better since they eat lobsters and shrimps and things? You know?
Yeah, I don't. Interesting. It would be a different taste for sure. But yeah. I don't know if I'd ever eat them.
Well, I'll tell you the problem. I'm gonna sidetrack you for a second. And get back to this. The problem with the hunting of the coyotes and the wolves and all that is, and I don't have a problem hunting, is no one's eating them.
Mm-hmm.
It's sport killing, and that's the bananas thing to me. Like, I don't get that. And whether it's fishing or anything else, the sport part is the part I don't connect with. You're gonna kill it, eat it.
Exactly.
And then you can make a case for it. Other than that, I lose entirely. So back to your guy here.
Yeah. So Carl is out there and you know, bringing a lot of attention, and then all of a sudden the people that brought him out to do this brought out Miley Cyrus, which was like a last minute thing. All of a sudden she comes out. Now this is during her days where she wasn't as popular, you know, and you're killing it.
Okay. So take me back to Ocean Carl and your interview with him.
Yeah. So Carl went out, got invited out by this group that was
trying to... You don't call him Ocean Carl?
No. Don't I don't know. I feel like Carl Safina. Safina sounds like sailing. I always...
It does.
It kind of works for him. It's kind of cool. But anyway, he's out. You know, he got invited out there. And then Miley Cyrus gets invited out by the same group. And I think they just reached out to her over Instagram And she's actually a big environmentalist. And so they didn't expect her to say yes, but all of a sudden she texts the back or DM'd them back and they're like, I'm in. And they're like, wow, okay, great. But this is the time right before, right at the time where Miley Cyrus kind of went a little weird.
Yes.
You know, went very artsy and
tried to be Madonna.
Yeah. Tried to be Madonna, yeah. And a lot of people didn't like her anyway. So I covered the story on my podcast and I got hate. Because I said, I thought it was a great idea having her out there because, like you said just before, but the Kardashians, they have this entire audience who knows maybe nothing about the oceans.
Or doesn't care.
Or doesn't care. But because, or they just don't listen to stuff on oceans or don't know because they don't know how to search it.
They don't know they care.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. They probably love the ocean, love going to the beach, but, and they do care, like they don't want to see pollution and stuff as most people don't, but they don't realize what's happening. And anyways, so she has this millions of fans and she has this opportunity to educate them. So she was Instagramming and all this stuff while she was on the boat and everything like that. And actually, Carl Safina had nothing but good things to say. He says she's actually quite intelligent and really into the whole, like learning about the wolves and all the conservation and everything. Anyway, I got hate from my podcast. Somebody said, this is the best. Somebody's like, I'm going to unlike your page if you cover her again. And I said, I just blocked you from my page because it's a page. If you take a like from my page, I really couldn't care less. But you know, I thought it was one of those things. I think you have to be careful with celebrities because I think a lot of times we, as conservationists, expect if they cover something on oceans, we expect almost too much from them.
Well, right? Yeah,
right. We expect them to like, oh, you got all this money. Let's just throw it. Like Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, he's really big into conservation. He's got this Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation. He does all this kind of stuff. But then the problem is just he throws money at everything, like all these iconic things, and he brings his name into things, but not everything gets done through him. Mm-hmm. But attention gets put on the issue, which is a good thing. But it really comes down to the people who are using that money to go ahead and do stuff. And sometimes it doesn't work out. So and we can maybe talk about that later. But I do think ocean celebrities or celebrities are good for the ocean. It's just I think we have to be careful because I think we rely too much on them saying, oh, well, you should fix this problem. You've got the world. Well, they don't.
And you have that. Plus you have they each carry their own baggage. Oh, you know, we're making the Kardashian jokes. We're making the Miley Cyrus jokes, which means they inherently are carrying baggage. There's bias implicit in those. And then the anti-conservationists will just say it's all those liberal celebrities again. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you really dig deep, even to the conservatives on these issues, they're also, everyone's environmentalist. If you get past the politics and you really ask, do you want that air clean? Do you want that ocean clean? Do you want more fishes? Everyone agrees on those things.
Yeah.
And then you bring a celebrity in and suddenly now there's two sides. And so it does cause that, but I welcome it.
It's attention.
Yeah.
Right? That's the whole thing is get attention on the subject and then it's what you do with it. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the guys that I've known for a while, David Schiffman, who's known on Twitter as AKA Why Sharks Matter, big social media guy.
Hey, I've got to get him on this show too. I've been chatting with him and he's awesome. Got to make the time. Yeah.
He's a lot of fun. And actually I'm going into this trip with him. I'm going to see him in a couple of days, but you know, he always says, you know, once there's a bad thing about sharks, like Shark Week, you know, over the past, last year was good, but a few years before that were pretty terrible for sharks and conservation because they just glorified the hunting part and the killing part.
Well, Discovery's moved away from being an educational channel to being an entertainment channel. Exactly. And which is, I mean, they can do both, but they're leaving the education part behind. And that's the problem with Shark Week and all those kind of things is because you forget why this matters, you know?
Exactly. And to give them credit, last year was a lot better than the previous years. And the year before was a lot better. So they're getting more back into the science, which is great, but
maybe they heard you.
I'll tell you who they heard is this guy, David, because he would criticize them every year. Because they came out with like, Megalodon exists. They came out with the fake documentaries and all this kind of stuff. And he just berated them. He was on CNN. He did this. But what he also says, what he also did is he's like, look, this Shark Week is a chance, no matter how glorified it gets, Shark Week is a chance to get other people who are in science communication to talk about sharks. And it could be about other things. When I first came out with the podcast, I had a series of Shark Week podcasts where I talked about sharks that weren't being talked about on Shark Week. right? Because it was always great whites, bull sharks, hammerhead sharks, tiger sharks. That was the only sharks that they covered. So we covered leopard sharks and all this kind of stuff, and Greenland sharks and six-gill sharks. And it was a lot of fun. And we talked about different people. And that's the one thing I love about my podcast is we don't get like the big names, but we get the people who are really into it and are doing stuff on like hands-on kind of stuff. And it's a, you know, it's just a lot of fun. I think a lot of the audience finds it more interesting because they're getting into the conservation and they're finding it. Oh, there are people who are doing some great things. And we just had I just covered a podcast with a guy, Andrew Wright, who just went to Antarctica for the first time. We talked about what it was like his first time working in Antarctica. And it was just amazing.
Well, now he didn't get shot down by the guards guarding the Antarctic ice wall on the flat Earth.
Yeah, no,
that's amazing.
Didn't fall off the Earth. It's a miracle. Yeah,
didn't remarkable.
Yeah. You know, he did talk to some orcas down there who were talking about flat Earth, but
yeah,
no, that's but so I mean, funny. He had a great time there, and it was just. You know, he was studying orcas actually, and he was like 3 feet from orcas as he was setting these acoustic instruments. And he's not a cold temperature person. He usually does work in the tropics and stuff with marine mammals. But he's like, this was a trip of a lifetime. And it was really cool. Just the preparations and the training they do, they have to sleep on the ice as a way of just in case you get caught on the ice. And they went to the different bases and stuff and talked about the bars at the different bases. And it was just a cool episode, but you get to talk to the people who are actually doing stuff, right? It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we see that, you know, it's funny, this is where your podcast and my podcast often cross over, is I'll grab your guests.
Absolutely.
I'll see someone on your show and go, oh, there's a person, or you'll even send me them. You'll say, hey, Clay, you got to talk to these spearfishers down in Australia or New Zealand or whatever, and we'll start talking and building relationships. And so we've had this relationship for a while. You've been making this podcast. You're an oceanpreneur. You're trying to make a living at the podcast. Yeah. I just getting in the dirt of this podcasting world. And this is kind of sausage making stuff. We like to talk about it. But there are a lot of listeners who are also podcasters, bloggers, YouTubers, and they want to know: Can I get an audience? Can I make a living at this? Is it a real thing? Are you making a living at your podcast yet?
If it was just off Speak Up for Blue podcast, no, I'm not making a living off of that.
You don't have your podcast money?
I don't have my pod. I'm not making the riches. I'm not, buying Teslas because I can afford the big expensive ones and stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's getting there. And I've got an audience. And I think the way I see it, it's all about consistency. Right.
And you're doing three shows a week, which is a lot, by the way. It's a stupid amount of shows. Yeah,
it's a stupid amount of shows. And I started off with once a week, went to 5 days a week because I
which
fell
is
in
bad
love
news.
With, yeah. Which, and that's after working a full time job, too. That was crazy. I kept that up for about 6 months. I talked to a buddy of mine, Nathan, who was doing some of the podcasts with me. And he was like, dude, you got to stop. Like, you're not sleeping. You're not doing this. And I'm like, yeah, you're right.
And your audience can't keep up. With that many shows a week, it's very difficult to make time to listen to five episodes a week.
So and it wasn't as if they were 10-minute episodes, right? No. They were like 30 to 40-minute episodes. Sometimes if it was an interview, it was an hour. So
yeah, you're no slouch when it comes to talking.
I could talk, which is why my wife loves me coming into my office and talking on a microphone, not to her, about science.
God.
Because she's just like, come on.
I hear the same thing about fish. So,
yeah, exactly. But what I do like now is I actually do podcast consulting, is what I've been doing. So I've picked up a couple of clients who've had trouble building an audience, and or who have just started, and I've kind of picked up their podcast and helped them grow it and kind of give them advice and all this kind of stuff on the structure of their show and all this kind of stuff. And if I have to do a little bit of editing, I'll do a little bit of editing, but a lot of it's just more of growing it and marketing it. And, it's kind of cool because you get to see how different people structure their podcast, how different people want to express their message and the different creative processes and all that. And I just give them that technical expertise that I've accumulated over the last 3 years.
Well, it's interesting because so just for people who don't know, the most podcasts never release more than 7 episodes. So there's somewhere to 450,000 podcasts now on Apple, right? It's some ridiculous amount. Mm-hmm. And most have less than 7 episodes. Yeah. And they do what's called pod fading. They disappear because either the people who start the show don't understand how much work it goes into making a podcast, which for me, for a 1-hour show, minimum 4 hours of work.
Yeah.
Minimum. And that doesn't include marketing it or
exactly.
It's editing, it's research, it's it seems like we wing it most of the time, but we're not. Actually, I really structure my shows and try to make people listen. You do the same thing. You plan what you're gonna say so that you can get your message out. And that's really important. People forget about that. And so all these shows are out there, so they need consultants, they need help to get a bigger audience and to grow it. And then most podcasts get less than 115 listeners per episode. Over half are less than 115. That's insane. And with the fact that everyone carries an iPhone in their pocket or a Android device, like 3-to-1 Android devices.
I love that.
Yeah, Android devices. But 3-to-1, the ratio of Apple products to Androids, 3-to-1. Yeah. But 90% of podcast listeners are on an Apple device, which means we're missing the Android crowds. If you're on Android, I'd love to hear from you and hear how you're listening to these podcasts, because we actually don't hear from Android people very often. Because 90% are on that one thing.
We're hoping Spotify brings that up a little bit, right?
They're number two now in just a very short time. And that's especially with the younger crowd. Everyone's on Spotify now. So
yeah, exactly. You can create playlists and stuff like that. And now you can use like the Alexa to use Spotify and all that. And do you know there's actually you're on Libsyn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's an actual Alexa. They've created an Alexa skill that you can play and you can fast forward and bring back using your voice. It's actually it's going to roll out to everybody. They just opened up to a couple of people. I've been able to slip in. The funny thing is, it only works in the U.S. It doesn't work in Canada, so I can't test it, which drives me nuts. So
I don't have Alexa, so I need it. My daughter does, so I'll check in with hers. And do you know if you yell, "Hey Siri, subscribe to the Speak Up for Blue podcast," Siri will hear you and do it. So that's if awesome. Anyone was playing that out loud in their house, you're welcome.
There you go. That's what you got to do on everyone. Hey,
Siri, what time is it?
But I find, one thing I find about podcasts is if somebody's not listening to a podcast, it's very difficult to get them to listen to a podcast.
Well, because you say, "Hey, do you listen to podcasts?" And they go, "What is that, a blog? Is that a YouTube channel?"
Yeah, they still don't know.
No.
And it boggles my mind. It really does boggle my mind. And to the point where I was at the bank one time, and they're asking, depositing checks, and they're like, "Hey, Speak Up for Blue, what do you do? And I tell them what I do. I tell them I have a podcast. I'm like, "Oh yeah, I don't listen to podcasts." Like, "Give me your phone." Like,
what? You have to.
And I'm downloading Spotify for you because I was an Android, and I'm like, boom, you follow my podcast, now listen to it. Because if not, if I tell them, "Oh yeah, it's on Spotify," I don't listen to Spotify?
When I go to expos or I'm speaking, I give out stickers and swag and stuff. And when people are visiting me, I won't give them a sticker unless they take their phone out and physically subscribe to the show in front of me, because they're never going to do it.
No, for sure.
It's crazy. So it really. So those who are listening who like podcasts, tell your friends about them. I mean, the best way, we all want your money, of course, but the best way to help a podcast is by helping us grow an audience that real advertisers will come in and give us the money.
Yeah.
And it's critical because podcasts don't get the same respect other mediums and the arts give. We get this kind of hobbyist kind of tone to people, and they don't realize how much work goes into creating this. And it is an art project. Making a podcast is art, and it's important that you support that, whether it's through money or through telling people about it, and telling people is a big deal. Now, you've got a private Facebook group that's how you promote your show. It's how I do mine as well.
Yeah.
Far more effective than a Facebook page. Do you want to tell us about your group?
Way more effective. Yeah. It's essentially a group where I get to interact with the audience, and I actually learned that from you. Thank you. When I was first on on your podcast, you were like, "Hey, I'm going to ask a couple of questions for my audience to see, if they like, I have a group." And I'm like, "A group? I've never even thought about it." Right. And I was frustrated with Facebook pages for a long
time. They want your money.
Unless you advertise, you're not going to get anything on there.
And not advertising $10 or $20. They want $50, $100. They want real money.
They want
which we don't have.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing.
Not Canadian dollars.
Not Canadian,
dollars that have value.
So true. We're getting there. We're getting there. I think your president is helping us out a little bit.
Oh, my God.
Depending on what he says on the day. If he mentions NAFTA, boom, our dollar goes down.
Yeah.
He doesn't mention it or think it. God forbid he tweets about it. The group really helps. It's a lot of interactive stuff. I mean, you're in the group and you're answering questions, and we're always commenting and stuff. It's just a great way to interact with the people, and it's just a lot of fun. I really enjoy it because I get a lot of feedback from people, usually positive, but sometimes I even say, like, what would you like to see, or what do you think I do that you would like to see me change? And I remember at one point, like, you ramble a lot at the beginning.
I'm
like,
sure. Okay.
I do. True. So now I try and keep it down to, like, you know, 4 or 5 minutes at the beginning, and then
ramble later. Yeah. Well, it's funny, and you being a science brain person, you're open to that kind of feedback. You're like, you're going to hear it and go, oh yeah, maybe I'm wrong. And that's the difference between you and, say, a lot of other podcasters who are like, screw you, I'm not changing for nothing.
You got to be able to take criticism, especially when you're online, and you can't take it personal. You know, I've had people say some pretty bad things about me, and it's just, you're just kind of like, okay, yeah, I got you. I'll take some of that, but the other's like, screw you kind of thing, you know?
Well, there's feedback, and then there's people just being mean, and that's the difference. A nice thing about a group is you're in charge, so people give you negative feedback, cool, let's talk about it. People are jerks, get out, and they're gone, and it's easy. Gone. See you later, block.
I like that as well. I've only had to block 2 people in my lifetime at for this Facebook
group. Yeah, sorry about that. I couldn't help myself.
But you know, for the most part, it was pretty good. Like the people there are really good. They're really interactive. They contribute some really insightful things, and that's what I want. Right? That's the goal of the podcast, is to continue that conversation somewhere else.
Now, if you can get all of those people supporting you through your crowdfunding, that would be your living right there. So you got, what, almost 700 people in your group, right?
Almost 700 people.
So if they all gave, let's say you do a monthly donation right through your show. Yeah. So if they all gave, let's say $5 a month.
Yeah.
So let's do some math. 5 times 700. What is that? $3,500 a month.
Yeah.
That's a living right there.
Yeah.
There's your base salary for your podcast.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what we're talking about the way that a lot of podcasts are getting funded now. This leading into another ad drop here. You ready for this?
I love it.
Most podcasters don't make money through traditional advertising. We make a little bit of money, but the most money comes from our listeners. Podcasters, as you know, are the most interactive of all the internet's people. And so we interact with our audience, and we want our audience to support the show. So if you go to patreon.com and search for Speak Up for Blue or Fish Nerds, and you give a little bit of money per month or per episode, that money adds up to where artists and creators like Andrew can make money on their show. I support your show. You support mine. So I guess that's a zero sum. But it looks good on paper. My show just crossed the $100 an episode mark on Patreon.
That's awesome.
Which means I'm making about a little over $400 a month on Patreon before the fees and stuff, which is not enough to pay a lot of bills. Producing a podcast costs a few $100 a month. And so we're asking listeners to go to patreon.com and support our shows and give us some money. If everyone on your page did a little bit of money, it's a living. You can quit all the other ways of trying to find a way to, like, take your wife out for dinner and pay some bills, and you can make a living at it. On my show right now, we do some of our advertising through Patreon. So, like, if listeners of our show, it's really for listeners, not for people who don't know us, but if listeners of our show have a business and they go to patreon.com/fishnerds and they give us $25 a month, an episode, then I'll mention their business on the show. Yep. So I have 2 doing it. I'm going to do that now. I'm going to mention them now so I don't forget. One of them is Josh Lopes, who gives us $25 an episode. That's $100 a month, which is a lot of money for most people. Mm-hmm. But if you're at a business, that's not a lot of money for advertising. And he actually is getting customers from us in Massachusetts. He's a tax guy. So lopestax.com, and tell Josh you heard about the podcast from us. And we also have just brand new supporting the podcast is... and I wrote this down, is Thirst Productions. Rich Collins, who you know,
yes.
is giving us now that advertising rate. So Thirst Productions is a one-man digital media agency catering to small business. This is more than I want to give, but small business, helping them improve their online presence. He does websites, SEO, social media, all that stuff. And he's also a correspondent on our podcast. So he contributes audio and he contributes money, which is amazing. And that's what put us over the $100 mark. Two more brand new donors I'm going to mention. I always mention all of our new donors on the show. Lycan Rancourt is now giving us $2 an episode, $8 a month. Again, that's not enough money to hurt your wallet, but it's enough money to make a difference in mine. And Nick Goldbrush, which is spelt weird, but it looks like goldfish, is giving us $5 an episode, $20 a month. And he makes another podcast called the Dependent Independent Podcast. And I met him at podcast... Mid-Atlantic a few months ago. He and I both were presenters there, and he makes a really great, he's making a 200 episode series exploring life lessons and that sort of thing, and it's really good. And he's one of those guys who's so good looking it makes you uncomfortable. Like, you just talk to him and you just wish, you wish, man, I wish I looked good like that. Yeah.
When, as you talk to him, that's all you see is you just all you're thinking about, God, you're good looking.
Yeah, he's just so, like, just so good looking. Yeah, so I mean, what are you going to do? So anyway, that's our Patreon pitch. I had to mention all of our new people. And we're doing a monthly giveaway now.
Everybody who's contributing. That's amazing. Yeah. That's really cool to see people supporting. I know it takes a lot for people to hit that button and contribute to Patreon, because it's not your typical sort of model that a lot of people think about. But if you listen to the podcast a lot and you really enjoy it, and this is your number one or number two podcast, and you listen to it a lot, then think about giving a few extra bucks, because it does help us a lot. And it doesn't hurt your wallet that all that much.
No, it's a notion of from a little comes a lot. If we all give a little bit, and that goes with conservation efforts too. Like, if I'm going to move out of this, but if you're looking at how can I help conservation causes, and I see like a donation button or something, you think I can't afford to donate to that cause, donate $1 to anything.
Yeah,
because your $1 times however many millions of people makes a huge difference. If you've got a quarter, drop it in the hat once in a while for someone else, help people out. Don't worry about, don't think, is my $1 significant? Because the answer is it is significant, and that goes for all the stuff.
Absolutely. So, the way I see it for people donating to conservation efforts is I always do it this way. If you want to reduce plastic and you want to reduce sort of like your impact on the environment, because plastic's a big problem, waste is a big problem, take the money you spend normally on a coffee cup, right? On a coffee. So say you spend what, you know, say like two or three Starbucks coffees a week, right? Mm-hmm. So that's probably like $10 to $15 a week. Even if you took that per month and you gave $15 per month to an organization that's working to get plastics out of the water, it's almost like you're offsetting whatever you're using. You know what I mean? And then try and reduce your cup cost by getting a refillable cup, and then go into Starbucks and they'll refill it for you. And then you can increase your donation to a conservation organization that's looking to clean up plastic either locally or regionally or whatever that might be. It's that simple. It's not small. A difficult thing. And you'll be surprised. We are very our scientists and conservation are so creative with budgets because we're so used to working with so little money. We can make a dollar stretch.
It's funny, as someone who works for donations and runs a nonprofit, I actually find I like having too much money, but I also find I'm less creative when I have a lot of money. Like, if I have all the money for all the things I want to do, I actually am less creative. I'm not saying don't give me more money, but I'm saying it, too much money does stifle the creative, your challenges are what makes people creative. So, give a little bit, give a tiny bit. Yeah,
absolutely.
This show is brought to you, like I said, by Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. You can go to healthiq.com/FNP to save some money on your health life insurance if you live a healthy lifestyle. Trustpilot rated Health IQ 9.6 out of 10 on its trustworthiness, I guess. Nice. So there's that. So if you live a healthy life, you're vegan, you're eating non-GMOs, or whatever you're doing, they will help you find a better rate on your life insurance, which is really important. just like if you drive your car safely, you pay less for car insurance. You should pay less for life insurance if you're treating your body well. So go to healthiq.com/FNP to see if you can save money on your life insurance. And you never know what the future brings, so having insurance really makes a big difference in knowing that your family will be good when you drop dead. And you will die someday.
So, absolutely. Yeah. No matter how many non-GMO items you eat, you're going
to
die
someday. It turns out everyone dies. Yeah. So be prepared by going to healthiq.com/FNP. All right, we're going to do some news. All right, and we're going to get right in here. Actually, this news story was given to us from one of our Patreon supporters, Joe Paccio, and we get a lot of our support from our podcast group here. And this is from The Salt, which I assume is NPR.
NPR, yeah.
NPR. But I don't know. Anyway, a floating fillet, rice farmers grow bugs to replenish California salmon. So you can these crossover stories here.
I know.
This is by Ezra David Romero. What a great name.
Yeah, it is a cool name.
All right. Jacob Katz is on the hunt, not for geese or ducks, on a farm about 40 minutes north of Sacramento. He wades through rice paddies with an aquarium net in hand, but he's not fishing. We're going bug hunting, Katz says. The senior scientist for California Trout, a conservation group with a focus on protecting wild fish. By the way, not to knock on trout groups, seems like every wild fish group or native fish group only seems to care about trout. I always have a little bit of a... I get a little edgy with the trout groups after a while, even though I'm a member of several. they don't care about minnows and fall fish and other kind of like, dace and stuff like that. They want the trout. I want the trout. Anyway, the River Garden Farms found in 1913. They typically grow things like corn, wheat, and other things. And this time, 5,000 acres of rice. And they use that for sushi restaurants. Today, he's working on a pilot project with UC Davis to create what they call floodplain fatties, a nickname for well-fed baby salmon and smelt who will eat his bugs while swimming through the Sacramento River. So they're raising this thing and then raising bugs in the patties for the thing.
Yep.
So they dip this net into the water and just comes out full of bugs, adding that they're mostly, this is a word I don't know, cladocerans, which he calls water fleas.
Mm-hmm.
And these little bugs are floating fillets for salmon that will be in the river. The reason he's doing this is young Chinook salmon and other fish need help. Much of the water they require to survive is stored in dams and diverted. That means there's no food forage for those fish, not enough food forage. They're adding to that food forage. So it's one amazing kind of, I'm not going to read the whole story, but
yeah,
kind of an amazing way of like diversifying what you're rice paddies are doing. So they used to just grow the rice, and now they're growing the rice and they're growing the food to support the wild fishes, which is kind of a really cool way to, creative way, we were talking about a minute ago, creative way to like support the things. And the cool thing is they show two different salmon smolts here and that are the same age. And one of them that they grew in the river was an inch and a half long.
Yeah,
which I don't know how that translates to Canadian. It's like 3 centimeters, roughly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the one in the floodplain not only was more than twice as long, but more than twice as fat as well. So the one they grow with, with all those added nutrients, so the fish are growing bigger,
stronger. It looks like
stronger.
An actual fish. It looks like the proper salmon or whatever. Is this a trout?
Yeah, it's a salmon.
It looks like a proper salmon, what you expect to find. And then, unfortunately, the river one is the one that you find now.
But the question I have with the river ones, now the dams are what's messing it up, but I would be curious historically how big were they? Because this is another thing that a lot of people get wrong is in a lot of our rivers that we are fishing for salmon these days, salmons weren't traditionally a large part of the history, even though the history books mention them constantly. It's that love affair with the trout and salmon. And so I'd be curious historically, what were they like before all the dams and what's the fossil record show and what's the history of it? Because in New Hampshire, where, people would say before the dams were built, and I can only speak from where I know, is before the dams were built, there were salmon so thick you can walk across them.
Yeah.
And so we're always like, try to restore the salmon. And then we get the fossil records or we get the Native American pots and we scrape them and we test to see what fish they were eating. And it's not salmon.
No.
salmon, we're not the fish, but we still latch in on those fish as that, I call them the Bambi fish. They're cuddly and attractive, and everyone gets attracted to them, and that's absolutely the fish that raises money for conservation groups.
Absolutely.
But it's not always the right fish.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because at the beginning of the story, you were talking about how, you know, the organization is named California Trout, and a lot of these organizations are named trout or they're named salmon of some sort, right? We have Trout Unlimited, and they do some great watershed revitalization.
They're fantastic.
They're great groups, but they're named for a reason because people identify with that, you know, with that thing. They're not going to identify with California cladocerin, which is the food that they're raising.
Right.
People are like, what the hell is a cladocerin? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, or the California dace.
Dace. They don't care about that.
There's no Sucker Unlimited.
For sure. Carp Unlimited. Nothing like that. Exactly. But, you know, and the same thing when you talk about like marine mammals and stuff, we'd always talk about saving the whales and saving the dolphins because they're iconic because we connect with them. Exactly. But when you save the whales the idea was that we call them iconic species, but we also call them umbrella species. And the idea with the whole umbrella species, you save one species, but you save everything below what they serve. So like marine mammals go over different habitats and whatnot, so you're saving all those habitats, right? Same as sea turtles. With salmon, right, same thing. You're saving rivers and you're hopefully saving oceans,
right? Because they put in the fish ladders and fish elevators for the salmon, but if they actually look at the numbers, it's shad, it's herring, sea lamprey, eels, other things that are using them way more than the salmon. And and so you're right, the umbrella species. But for those of us who like all species of fish, we get, you know, like, yeah, come on, give some love to the underdogs once in a while, you know?
It's a big point of contention when you get, researchers that are all about salmon and researchers that are about everything else, because they always make fun of each other. Like, we don't care about the salmon, or we don't care about we should care about everything, not just one species. It's true, but it's just more of like a teasing thing that happens in science when you get those scientists kind of together.
Yeah, and they get a little butthurt about it because they actually do care about everything, and they don't want you to think they only care about
the
salmonids. It's not just salmonids, they take care of everybody.
But I think in this story here, you know, it's interesting, it's a clear adaptation to an adaptation.
Sure.
You know, we talk about the dams and everything, like these floodplains were floodplains before, and mm-hmm. they've taken them away probably back then for agriculture. Right. And that's what happens a lot historically in the US and Canada and probably even Mexico, is everything was for agriculture. And so they changed the sort of the landscape, especially the waterscape, to make sure that, you know, they would have rivers, but they wouldn't have huge floodplains, like the crops wouldn't get flooded. So this is an adaptation where they're actually going in and they're flooding an area, they're flooding a plain and then just flooding it with food because that's the food that they love to eat.
Sure.
And there's other adaptations with salmon where they used to mess around with the pH levels of the rivers because salmon liked a certain pH and whatnot. And it was just like, okay, we'll bring them back. And then it would fluctuate. And it was all about, you know, getting your hands in there and trying to figure things out. And the problem is you're just like, after a while, you're like, how many times are we going to get in there and try and mess with the system instead of just allowing the system to be the system?
Right. But, aside from taking dams out, which is the real answer to all this, it's all we got. And so until that happens, we've got to keep doing the things. They're finding when they remove dams, all the fish come back in a surprisingly fast pace. The fish, nature knows what to do.
Yeah.
If we just stop and walk away, it comes back and it fixes itself. And
absolutely.
And if it doesn't, then it's not gonna. But if nature can't fix it, we certainly can't. I think that's it.
No, exactly.
Just walk away. You know, take apart, take out the human stuff, and let the fish do it. So,
but I do like that the effort. You know, they're using the double sort of advantage here, where they're growing rice fields, and then they're also helping out the salmon to bring them back. I think.
Well, sure, and I didn't read I don't know where the funding has come from, but I guarantee you that guy's not doing it for free.
No,
I'm sure there's tax incentives. I'm sure that there's money coming in, grants, and why not? Why not make being environmentalist or being good for the environment also fiscally good for your own wallet. Why can't you make money being an oceanpreneur or anything else in conservation, right?
That's the idea nowadays, right, is to add that benefit. And I think like the people who buy the rice from these fields should be promoting it. Like the rice field should be saying, this is what we're doing.
Oh, I'm
trying to bring it back.
Well, California's smart about advertising what they're doing. I'm sure there's a tag on that rice saying, eating this rice supports the wild Chinook salmon. I'm sure I'm sure they're smart about it. So they know.
I hope so. Yeah.
As bananas as they are sometimes, they're smart about advertising. All right. Next story. Yeah. Let's move on here. We got a few stories to get to. We're a few minutes left here. All right. This is from Harvard.
Yes. I like
Harvard. I took some Harvard students ice fishing this winter.
Nice.
Yeah. They had a great time. They were pre-med. Using shark scales to design better drones, planes, and wind turbines. So they're taking fish technology.
Yep.
And using them to design things. All right. To build more aerodynamic machines, researchers went to an unlikely spot, the ocean. A team of evolutionary biologists and engineers at Harvard University, in collaboration with colleagues from the University of South Carolina, have shed light on decades-old mystery about shark skins, and in the process demonstrated a new bion-inspired structure that could improve the aerodynamic performance of planes, wind turbines, drones, and cars. This is published in the Journal of Royal Society Interface. Sharks and airplanes aren't actually all that different. From experience, I can tell you one flies better than the other. Both are designed to efficiently move through fluid, water, and air, using the shape of their bodies to generate lift and decrease drag. The difference is sharks have about 400 million year head start on the design process. So, by the way, if you don't believe in evolution, you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Go to the Flat Earth podcast.
By the way, that's along with everything else they don't believe in, evolution's on their list.
Oh, of course. That would be the number one tick, I think.
It's a religious-based thing. So the skins of sharks is covered with thousands and thousands of small scales or denticles, which vary in shape and size around the body. And we know a lot about the structure of those denticles, which is very similar to human teeth, but the function has been debated. So now they're kind of zeroing in on the function of these things.
Yeah.
But basically, they're taking all this technology, and now they're saying, can we layer the wings of a plane with small, basically scales, these denticles, and make the planes fly more efficiently or make turbines spin more efficiently? But it's pretty amazing how they take this fish technology and move it into engineering and to see evolutionary biologists work with engineers, it's amazing to me.
Well, and that's the key about the ocean, is there's so much to find in the ocean. And what's interesting is, you know, we always say as conservationists, was like there's so much biodiversity in the ocean. If we were decrease that, we lose out on discovering things like this, right? This is going to help. You know, you think about wind turbines, you think about planes, you think about drones and all that. Wind turbines especially, you know, if you can make them run more efficiently, then we're going to get more energy for the buck, right, of running them. So this is going to help us in the future as a human species. And we found them in the water. You know, same with cancer research and all this kind of stuff. You find them in the water because there's so many different adaptations that these animals have taken. I mean, like we talked about 400 million years of adaptation. There's a reason why they're still around. And it's because the scales, it's because the way they grow their teeth, it's because the way they hunt, the way they swim, everything like that. And what gets us a lot of times, there was just a paper that came out, I think it was in Science or something like that, or Nature. It was talking about how people didn't realize what biodiversity was about, or they didn't care about biodiversity. And I get it because what's it going to do to them? But that's what we always say as scientists is like, that's where you're going to get the meat of everything.
Yeah. Well, people don't care about biodiversity until they do. Like until they know they need to care about it. It's the same we were talking about earlier. They don't know, you don't know your environmentalist until you really put your brain to it. And it turns out everyone is.
Yep.
And diversity, same thing. You don't know you need diversity until you realize you don't have it. Exactly. Or until someone shows it to you in a way that's not judging you and not telling you you're an idiot, because that doesn't work for science.
No, exactly. So. It was like, imagine like saying like, okay, somebody you knew had cancer, God forbid. We all know somebody who's had cancer or who is going through it right now. Imagine if the cure was in the ocean.
Well, right?
That's where researchers are going. They're going to corals. They're going to like starfish. And they're going to areas that regenerate their cells and species that regenerate their cells and be able to do something about it. And it's just that's where we're going to find it.
Right. Well, I mean, with cancer, there's only, as far as I, and I'm sure I'm going to get corrections, but there's only a few animals with spinal cords who do not get cancer. Other than that, almost every animal gets cancer, especially if you're a chordate. And it's a natural biological control. Cancer is terrible, but it happens to every animal except for a handful of sharks and frogs.
Right.
And they're looking at those animals and saying, how can we learn from nature? Exactly. If our ego gets too big, we forget to pay attention to what the animals have already figured out.
Yeah.
They're not as deliberate of us, but our best adaptation as an animal is our brains, and are able to take that information and translate it into helping each other survive. But pretty amazing at Harvard to doing this kind of stuff. I love that crossover science stuff.
Love it. Collaborations, cool. Man. We need to do more.
We need more,
and
we need to fund this stuff.
yeah. Well, the thing is, when you fund this, is easier to fund because they're going to sell something based on this, right? Like this, you know, Harvard will probably come up with a prototype, and then they'll sell the technology and stuff. And universities love this kind of stuff because it brings in money to the universities.
Well, and if you look at places like Harvard, who have like a $1 billion endowment, they're self-funding a lot of their own studies.
Yes.
And their donors are, you know, a lot of their donors who fill the endowment up, they went to Harvard, they were rich when they started, they're more rich when they finish, and they're able to refill those coffers. And they, you know, if Harvard puts out an article like this, and it gets in front of the right people, they get $2.5 million donations, $30 million donations, monstrous amount of money comes back to them.
Yeah, this is huge for them.
I do want to do the, from healthyholisticliving.com, and I want to talk about two sides of this article. First of all, the headline, Farmed Salmon, One of the Most Toxic Foods in the World.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Nicholas Daniels' documentary, Filet-O-Fish, takes a critical look at the fish industry, featuring exclusive footage from fish farms and factories across the globe. Many still have rather romanticized a view of fishing, but when it comes to large-scale food production, the picture is actually rather grim. And it goes on to talk about how fish are farmed and how they become this like chemical cocktail, which all can be true. And they claim farmed salmon is one of the most toxic foods in the world. And this is where it's kind of a cautionary thing on farmed fish. I don't want to read the whole article. Have you heard this before?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a huge debate, huge debate in the world right now with farmed salmon.
Yeah, farmed salmon, especially the way it can be farmed, it's not all. The trick is farmed fish is not generic. It's not a thing that we can say, okay, this is farmed, therefore it's bad. Right. So given that fish is, it's the only wild animal we see in supermarkets, and so many cultures, so many people eat fish. Farming fish might be the only way to keep fish in our lives, just like we farm. Just like we farm, I'm going to say moose, but that's not a thing, cows and other animals for food, farming fish is not a thing. So like learning this about fish, that some of the farms are doing it in a way that maybe is polluting the fish, is not to say don't eat farmed fish, but it might be do your homework on your farmed fish. Maybe we can talk to those companies and get them to do practices that are less harmful to the fishes. Yeah. And I don't know the answers. You've done some more on this.
Yeah, I mean, okay, there's a couple of implications with farmed fish. There's the invasive species of farmed fish. So what happens, especially with salmon or anything that's open pen, so salmon are raised indoors, like in a facility, when they go through their river phase. But then when they have to have their saltwater phase, they get put in these open pens.
Yeah.
The problem right now.
And for Atlantic salmon, that's been a lot of times in like the Puget Sound area of Washington State, which has been a huge problem, right?
Exactly. So they'll take Atlantic salmon and farm them in the Pacific. And then so if they get out like they did last summer.
And the summer before that.
And the summer before that.
Happens every year.
Yeah. And so it invades, you know, you eventually get an invasion or an acute sort of event where there's an invasion of Atlantic salmon. Eventually, they're going to start to figure out that they can live there, you know, and you're going to start to see more Atlantic salmon in the Pacific, which is bad just because there's Atlantic salmon in the Pacific. It's going to mess with the dynamics of the Pacific salmon. They're going to compete. It's going to be bad. The other thing is how they raise them. Mm-hmm. With anything farming, and you look at anything from like if you compare it to organic farming to sort of these warehouse farms or whatever they call them, industrial farming, you know, you're trying the farmers in industrial farming and the work same with aquaculture is you're trying to grow the fish as fast as you can and with the most sort of meat on it that you can and sell it. So you want to sell them big, sell them heavy, and then you get the most money for them. Well, the problem of doing that is when you actually raise them that way, they're not. It's not a normal way of raising them. It's not waiting the 1 or 2 years. You're waiting less time. And to do that, you potentially use hormones. You optimize feed, which may not be good for them in the long run. You get disease.
Well, and that so the disease is really important. I'm gonna steer you a little bit here.
Go ahead. Yeah.
And so these salmon pens, if you look at what a wild school of salmon might look like versus a pen school, is you have a crowding problem, right?
Yes.
And so if you are condensed in a very, very small area with a lot of other people or salmon or whatever animal you are, and one of your people or your fish gets sick, that disease spreads very, very quickly throughout the entire system.
Yeah,
and this is the big problem here is that it was crowded pens, and they found in Norway, they found that salmon anemia virus has spread across the entire country from the farmed fish, starting with farmed salmon, and that's kind of the big scare here. And the solution
might be some of the salmon from Norway is also over here because they
exactly
switch, right they trade.
Yeah. But and they escape and they'll mix with other groups of fish. But in Norway, they've actually a lot of the salmon in the wild salmon have even become infected from the farm raised fish where they're native. So it's been a big problem there. So crowding's a huge problem. I don't know the answers. It might be open pens might be good in a lot of ways too, as far as like, being able to feed more people easier. But I think the solution is unfortunately the prices are going to have to go up on fish that are farm-raised. Sure. Especially to do it in a way more sustainable, organic, I don't even care what's organic, but more sustainable way. Because you have to thin these herds down a little bit so your diseases aren't such a problem. There's no, not to mention the whole other problem. Have you heard of dead zones?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, yes. So under the pens, the animals poop and it just kills the water under the pens and it's all bad news.
And that depends. So that was a big thing a while ago, and it still is to a certain point, but that's all with the siting of the pens. So there's a lot of modeling that goes on to make sure that there's enough current to wash out all that waste that goes to the bottom. Like you talk about the crowded pens and all the crap that comes down. It gets washed off, so it gets a little – it goes away more often. It gets diluted more often, but, of course, it continues to happen. So as long as that current's there, you're usually okay. If it's not – You got some problems.
Yeah. Well, then we get to a marketing problem. Okay. So we're always marketing. You have to eat more fish. Eat more fish. It's healthy. It's high in omega-3 fatty acids. All the stuff we need. And then you go to the store and farmed Atlantic salmon, $6 a pound.
Yeah.
Or you get a wild caught something else, and you're at like $22 a pound. What are you going to buy? Most people, $6 a pound. So there's a problem there where we don't know what we're buying or why we're buying it. And it goes right back into that conservation talk about sustainability anyway. And
absolutely.
I almost think there should be indices on fish. So like if you buy it, it should be a chart. You know, this fish is not raised sustainably. Therefore there's a tariff or a tax on that to pay for the problems in the back end. That price would make up the price difference between a sustainable fish and a fish that's not sustainable. People would choose the better fish.
It's funny. I just had the same conversation.
I'm going to get in trouble for that one, by the way.
No, that's okay. I had the same conversation with a friend of mine, Lynn Morissette, who was on the podcast. We asked the question, should seafood companies pay into a conservation fund to help reestablish fishing?
Yes.
You know, because they're the ones, especially these big corporations. I'm not talking about the artisanal fishers, the small-time fishers, but the big corporations who control everything. Should they be paying back into a fund? Because they're the ones who are causing the trouble, including aquaculture companies. They're the
absolutely
ones
who are trouble.
And here, I don't know if you guys get in New Hampshire, but here in Ontario, very little people will buy anything farmed because there's just this stigma with it that farmed is bad. They will rather buy wild and pay for the wild than get the farm. And there's this video going around of a salmon that's in a store. I don't know if it's a Costco or wherever, but it's in a store where there's this little like sea lice that's coming in, that's in the salmon.
I've seen that, yeah.
Right? And everybody's seen it. And of course, that is like killing the whole farmed salmon thing because they're like, look, this is it. Now, I've looked every time I buy salmon. and in it, because I buy farm salmon and I look at it and I'm like, there's nothing there. Like, this is like,
well, the problem with using a parasite as your sales tool or your anti-sales tool doesn't work, because fish are covered in parasites, wild caught, farm raised.
Yep.
I mean, wild caught Chinook salmon have what's called a salmon tapeworm in them.
Yeah.
You cut one that's fresh, never been frozen, you're going to find parasites in these fishes.
Yeah.
Is that a reason not to buy it? Nope. There might be other reasons, but don't let the parasites, you're going to cook the fish. Don't sweat the parasites.
And I'll tell you, I think the biggest thing, if people are afraid of eating farm salmon, is stop eating salmon.
Oh, yeah.
Eat something else that's sustainable, because salmon is sold. I went to Mexico on a family trip, and they were trying to sell me salmon. And I'm like, how are you, like, why would I eat salmon here?
Well, you're in Mexico.
I'm in Mexico. I get it in Canada all the time. Like, I'm in Mexico. Give me something local that's sustainable and it'll support local fishing. I don't want something from up north. I just came from up north to get away from up north.
Well, it goes back to, you're seeing this in the trend of food anyway, is eat local. That's the fastest path to sustainability, is eating local. Unfortunately, you're in Ontario, so screw you on the seafood. But
that's the thing, is why should I eat seafood if I'm in Ontario? I should be eating pickerel. I should be eating trout. I should be eating the local fish that's here, because they're delicious. You know,
they are good. But turns out they taste like fish.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. By the way, I think salmon are the most overrated seafood there is, as far as flavors go. There's so many good things to eat. So anyway, just something to ponder. We don't have answers, but the other thing I want to do is be careful with these articles when you're sharing them around, because this is from healthyholisticliving.com.
Yeah.
Which just in the website title alone, there's a giant bias right there. Absolutely. And not everything they're going to give you is, well, it may be accurate, but it's also a lot cherry-picked. So I'm not calling them liars, but they also will cherry-pick the data to make the article seem as extreme.
Just like a lot of other places are. They're manipulated and stuff. You talk about like GMOs, non-GMO fish, and you're just like, same DNA. Same DNA.
My favorite GMO, I'm going to kind of go on a quick tangent here, is as I have friends who are like, I don't eat GMO proteins. And I'm like, well, why not? We don't know what our body does with that. And I say, yes, we do. Your body synthesizes protein the same. It doesn't know the difference. It knows what to do with protein. There's no added, like, there's not a thing added to it. You want to say no hormones, well, we can have a conversation. But, like, GMOs don't mean there's a big chemical difference in the outcome of the meat. It's just meat.
Exactly. So, they haven't changed it. It's the exact same. They just reproduced it.
It might grow faster.
Yeah.
Which is not bad.
Yeah. But not, that doesn't mean that. Like, GMO just means like they've just replicated the DNA of that fish or protein, whatever your source it is, and it's just growing like that. So I always love how non-GMO, and everybody's like, oh, I don't eat anything GMO. I'm like, yeah, you do. You just don't realize it.
Yeah.
Because most things are GMO.
Well, imagine if you were eating corn the way it originally grew, you know, the three inch little cobs of corn that were inedible, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's the news. All right, before we wrap up, Andrew, what's been your biggest challenge with promoting your podcast, getting new listeners? What's been your biggest challenge?
I think it's reaching new audiences.
Yeah.
That's the biggest challenge, right? It's going on other podcasts like I'm doing now and like you do with mine and others. And I think it's getting to in front of people who listen to podcasts and getting them to listen to mine. Because a lot of times I don't even bother with people who don't listen to podcasts.
It's a time suck, right?
Yeah.
So if you meet a podcaster, by the way, on the streets, this goes to the audience, not to you, Andrew. This is to the audience. If you meet a podcaster and they say, hey, I make a podcast, the biggest compliment you can do to them is take your phone out and subscribe right in front of them.
Yeah.
Don't say, I'll listen later when I have time. Don't go, I'll check it out. Get your phone out. Even if you're never going to listen.
Yeah.
They're making artwork. Show them you care about them. Get your phone out and show them that you're subscribed to their podcast. It makes a big difference, and it's every single listener is super duper important. Andrew knows this. I know this. We have to value each person, and it's really great. So that's a big challenge. And what's the big message you're pushing these days? What's your big, you have like a issue that is like your pet issue?
Well, right now it's politics, right? It's with everything going on in the States, most of my audience, 90% of my audience is in the US. And there's obviously a lot of policy being put against science in general. against the environment and for fossil fuels and coal and all that kind of stuff. And
we got to put those coal miners back to work.
Got to put those coal miners back to work.
Because we need more coal.
And the big thing is for me is to tell people, look, if you don't like it, talk to your local representatives, your state and congressperson who's in charge of your area, others as well, or hook up with some nonprofits who are doing the same thing. There are a lot of nonprofits who are well connected politically on both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Republicans, they like the environment. If they can get the environment, you get the right angle, boom, you can get them in. And they're allowed to do it from the party lines, they'll do it. But the big thing that I always tell people is, like, if you really don't like it and you don't like it, run for office.
Yeah.
You know, the Congress, the you guys are about to elect some congressmen, the Congress people and senators, I think, and a couple
sure.
senators. Like, run for office. If you really don't like it, run for audience and change. Like, be that change. And that's my big message right now, is just to be that change. We had that in Canada. There's a lot of changes, whether people agree with it or not. A lot of change. We see a lot more women in politics right now, which is amazing. And here in Canada, in the cabinet, we've had the most women appointed to as head of these departments, as ministers, than we've ever had before. Minorities as well. Like, get out and show who you are and what you believe in.
Yeah, and you can vote with your wallet too, which says a lot. So buy things that make sense for the environment and make sense absolutely. For your family, yeah. and just think about the future. Every time you buy something, think, am I helping or hurting? And
exactly,
and make that move. And you're not going to always win, you know.
No, sometimes it's just you're just stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Sometimes you got to buy a bottle of water. It's you don't true. Have a choice. You need the water. You know,
it's true. I completely understand there, but there's a lot of ways you can change. There's a lot, and it's small steps. And it leads to bigger steps. And once you get hooked, right? So it's a bit addictive once you find out how to do things.
Yeah. And, you know, and don't be hard on people.
Yeah.
Bring them with you. Don't pick a fight. Yeah.
Yeah. And provide alternatives too. It's like, you can say ban the plastic bags, but you're like, well, yeah, we got reusable bags right here, you know?
Yeah. So. And we do, at our house, we have, my kids love drinking from straws. So we do paper straws. And they work great because you're not drinking for hours, you're drinking for minutes. So exactly. they don't last, you can't reuse them, but they work for your quick smoothie in the morning. Yeah. So it's not bad. So
we do glass straws, and they actually last a lot longer than I expected. I thought they'd break because I have two young kids. Nope. Mm-hmm. They've been lasting us for like 5 years so far.
Yeah. For my iced coffee, which is my summertime addict, I have a metal straw, which I like. Perfect. And I feel like it's colder. The liquid's colder coming up there, and it's great.
Careful though. There might be some tariffs on that.
Well, I already own it.
That's true. You don't have to keep buying it, which is great, right?
That's right. That's right. I've already bought them. Tax-free in New Hampshire. All right.
There you go.
Yeah, all right, let's wrap this show up. Andrew.
So that's it. You've listened to a couple of Fish Nerds when you should have been fishing. We'd like to thank our families for supporting us while we podcast, go on fishing quests, and do all silly things that nerds do.
And we do a lot of silly things, even a serious podcast like yours. Special thanks to Andrew Lewin from Speak Up for Blue. You can find everything at speakupforblue.com. Is that right?
That's right. Absolutely. That's speakupforblue.com. It's the site.
Good.
And so until next time, follow the code of the fish nerds. Spawn early and often.
Never trust a free lunch with strings attached.
And swim against the current every chance you get.
My daughter asked me, what does spawn early and often mean? And it makes me want to rethink my tagline.
Yeah. Oh. Hey, I hear you, man.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.